Our topic today that Bill and I will be reflecting on is call, summons, and hope. And that's our topic. And as a way of exploring this, I want to mention that we are in the liturgical season in the church year, for those of you who follow the liturgical season. We're in the season of Epiphany, which I think, as it turns out, is a really opportune time to talk about call, summons, and hope. And let me just remind us a little bit about that word, Epiphany. You know, it refers to the story of the Magi coming to see the baby Jesus, but what interests me most is the very word Epiphany, and that it is descriptive of the season in the church year, and I think that all of the seasons of the church year also describe seasons in our own lives. Okay? So the word Epiphany comes from the word, from Greek roots epi, meaning upon, on, over, near, at, before, or after. Kind of everywhere, okay? And the word phanos means a light, or a torch, or a lantern. So a light, a torch, a lantern shining everywhere. And we tend to define it as a moment of sudden insight or revelation, or a profound understanding of something, that something becomes conscious, okay? I think that's how we use the word epiphany. So with that in mind, knowing that we are in the season of Epiphany, we will be talking about call, summons, and hope. But first, let us review our discernment listening guidelines. This is kind of our ethos for how to be present, how to listen, how to respond. And as I've said every time, I think these guidelines are not easy to follow, but we highly recommend them, and here they are. Take time to become settled in God's presence. Listen to others with your entire self, senses, feelings, intuition, imagination, and rational faculties. Do not interrupt. Pause between speakers to absorb what has been said. Do not formulate what you want to say while someone else is speaking. Speak for yourself only, expressing your own thoughts and feelings, referring to your own experiences. Avoid being hypothetical and steer away from broad generalizations. Good luck to us. Do not challenge what others say. Listen to the group as a whole, to those who have not spoken aloud as well as to those who have. Generally, leave space for anyone who may want to speak a first time before speaking a second time yourself. And finally, hold your desires and opinions, even your convictions, lightly. I want to explore call and summons and hope by describing event, E-V-E-N-T, event. And it is, I'm using it today, I'm borrowing from Jack Caputo, who is a 21st century theologian. Jack Caputo talks about event, and it, for Jack, it's a somewhat technical word, and he describes it as that which happens in what is happening. Now, is that helpful?
No. That,
that which happens in what is happening. Okay, and I'm going to give you some examples in a minute or two. So he talks about event as that which happens in what is happening. Okay. He also suggests that what happens and what is happening is God. He suggests that event, as he is talking about it, is descriptive of the nature and character of God. Okay? In some ways, it's akin to epiphanies. It's like something's happening, and then it's like, whoa, now I see something in this event, quote unquote, that illumines something for me. It's like seeing more in what is, or actually just seeing what is. Okay? So the impact of an event is really, I would say, dependent upon our response or our interaction or our participation with that event. Okay? So let me suggest some other characteristics of event. And by the way, when we think of event, we think of something that we plan. We're going to plan an event. And, you know, we have it sort of, we have a plan, we organize it, we, you know, we kind of have anticipated outcomes. You know, it's like gathering today. You know, it's like, well, here's an event, come and so forth and so on. Event, in the way that Caputo was talking about, is not something that we create, that we create, okay? It is not something that we make happen. Sometimes we see it, and sometimes we don't. An event for Caputo is non-coercive. It doesn't really demand anything of you. But it may command, it may compel and evoke a response in you that I would go so far as to say can change a life. Event is freely given. An event is also not something that is always perfectly revealed. Event is, I think event shows potential, possibilities. Event is sort of an openness. And then our interaction with it is what shapes what's going to happen next. Okay. The effects of an event can be transcendental, transforming, revelatory, or I'll use the word epiphanic. Okay. So what does event have to do with call and summons and hope? I want us to play with this a little bit today, and I suggest that event has everything to do with call and summons, and hope. And as I said, our interaction with these events, our ability to interact and to interpret and to wonder and to imagine is key. Okay, so let me give you some illustrations. Bear with me. I am going to read several poems to you this morning. Usually when I want to unpack a poem, I'll read it twice to get us to hear it again, as if for the first time.
To coin a phrase.
But I'm just going to read them through once, because I think that what these poems reflect is event, in the way that Jack Caputo is talking about event. And let me remind you again, he goes so far as to suggest that event is descriptive of God. God as a verb, if you will. Okay? So, this poem is likely very familiar to many of you. It's called Snow Geese by Mary Oliver. It's a wonderful poem. Let me say at the outset that where she begins in the poem is the reflection and experience that she summarizes from her experience of seeing snow geese. Okay? So she starts this poem, I mean, we will follow her and come to see the snow geese ourselves, okay? But she starts the poem already having experienced this. So her insight in the very beginning of this poem, I suggest, comes out of her awareness of seeing these snow geese, really seeing them, and also knowing that this was a moment that won't last. That particular moment of the snow geese won't last. Okay? That it's fleeting. But the experience of that moment has changed her and has helped her to see things, maybe everything, differently. Okay? I think that's the power of an event. Okay? So, oh, to love what is lovely and will not last. What a task to ask of anything or anyone, yet it is ours. And not by the century or the year, but by the hours. Okay, this is her insight from seeing the snow geese come and go. Oh, to love what is lovely and will not last. What a task to ask of anyone or anything, but it is ours. Okay. One fall day, I heard above me and above the sting of the wind a sound I did not know, and my look shot upward. It was a flock of snow geese, winging it faster than the ones we usually see, and being the color of snow, catching the sun. So they were, in part at least, golden. I held my breath, as we do sometimes, to stop time when something wonderful has touched us. By the way, I think that's characteristic of event also. I held my breath as we do sometimes to stop time when something wonderful has touched us. The geese flew on. I have never seen them again. Maybe I will someday, somewhere, maybe I won't. It doesn't matter. What matters is that when I saw them, I saw them. As through the veil, secretly, joyfully, clearly. I suggest that this experience describes what Jack Caputo is saying is an event. We didn't create it. We didn't contrive it. There's nothing coercive about this. This experience ended up being kind of invitational. She looked up, and it was a sound she wasn't even familiar with, but it caught her somehow. And from engaging and reflecting on this experience, she got an insight about how important it is to love what is lovely and will not last, because frankly, nothing does. What a task to ask of anyone or anything, but it is ours. Okay? So, this poem you heard me read a couple of sessions ago. Love this poem. I too think that this is descriptive of what Caputo is getting at. And by the way, my apologies to Jack Caputo, because I may have this wrong, but it...
But he's not here.
But he's not here. So this is my riff on Jack Caputo.
And we just
so.
Have to block him from watching the video of it.
Yeah, right, yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah, we'll, that's right. Yeah. We will block him from that. This is also another example of what I consider to be event, okay? This happens. We didn't plan on it. It entered into our life. It's natural. It's uncontrived. I already said that. And it quickens something in the observer. Okay? And in this case, kids, older women who think about the times when they weren't so old. Judith Wright beautifully says, you know, this experience gave people something to believe in. So here we go. It's night herons. It was after a day's rain. The street facing the west was lit with growing yellow. The black road gleamed. First one child looked and saw and told another. Face after face, the windows flowered with eyes. It was like a long fuse lighted, the news traveling. No one called out loudly. Everyone said, hush. The light deepened, the wet road answered in daffodil colors, and down its center walked the two tall herons. Stranger than wild birds, even, what happened on those faces? Suddenly believing in something, they smiled and opened. Children thought of fountains and circuses and swans feeding. Women remembered words spoken when they were young. Everyone said, hush. No one spoke loudly. But suddenly the herons rose and were gone. The light faded. This experience of seeing these two herons walking down a wet road as the sun is starting to set caught everyone's eye, imagination, wonder. And I love the description of people, they smiled, and this event made people feel open. I think something about events makes us have a sense of possibility, of a kind of openness. Who would have imagined that two herons walking down would make children think of circuses and swans feeding and women remembering words spoken to them when they were young and giving us something to believe in, okay? But if any of you have seen something like that, you may be able to relate to what she's describing. And let me say that I do not think there is anything esoteric about any of this. I suggest that we all have the capacity to see as these poets are describing. It's in us. It's part of the poetics of our human condition, okay? This is not esoteric. You don't have to be a poet to appreciate wild geese or two herons walking down the road. But it is an invitation to see and to wonder and to notice. And I'll do a quick aside here. I think there are a lot of things about our culture that deaden us or overstim us without nourishing us, that dulls our senses. I think that what's naturally in us will respond, as this poet did, to the two herons walking down the road. Okay. This poem by Billy Collins. He was poet laureate several years ago. I love this poem. This is getting at event by describing it a slightly different way. Here we go. It was after dinner. You were talking to me across the table about something or other, a greyhound you had seen that day, or a song you liked. And I was looking past you over your bare shoulder at the three oranges lying on the kitchen counter, next to the small electric bean grinder that was also orange, and the orange and white cruets for vinegar and oil, all of which converged into a random still life, so fastened by the hasp of color. By the way, how often do we hear the word hasp anymore? So fastened together by the hasp of color and so fixed behind the animated foreground of your talking and smiling, gesturing and pouring wine, and the camber of your shoulders, that I could feel it being painted within me, brushed on the wall of my skull. So he saw these three oranges and the cruets and the, you know, the bean grinder, the orange. There was something about that and the way that she was talking and the lilt of her voice that caught him in some way, that he then could see those three oranges, to be in brief. It was like he could feel it, he said, painted within me, brushed on the wall of my skull. While the tone of your voice lifted and fell in its flight, and the three oranges remained fixed on the counter, but the way stars are said to be fixed in the universe. Okay? I think he saw those oranges as an event in the Caputo sense. Okay? Then, all the moments of the past began to line up behind that moment. And all the moments to come assembled in front of it in a long row, giving me reason to believe that this was a moment I had rescued from the millions that rush out of sight into a darkness behind my eyes. Okay? He really experienced this moment. All of the past began to line up behind that moment, and all the moments to come assembled in front of it like a long row, giving me reason to believe that this was a moment I had rescued from the millions that rush out of sight into darkness behind the eyes. How many times has there been something that we could behold and we didn't, or we couldn't, or we just missed it? This was a moment that made him realize how many millions might have rushed by without being attended. And then listen to this, this is great. Even after I have forgotten what year it is, my middle name, and the meaning of money, okay? So when dementia starts to hit or whatever, as I age, I might forget a whole bunch of things. But he says, I will still carry in my pocket the small coin of that moment, minted in the kingdom that we pace through every day. Okay? A lot of other things are going to come and go. But this moment, okay, I will carry in my pocket the small coin of that moment, minted in the kingdom that we pace through every day. Billy Collins, incidentally, isn't, I don't think he self-described as a Christian, but he does recognize that we live in such a kingdom of such treasure. And let me remind you, it's the three oranges on the counter, looking across his lover or his partner's bare shoulder as she talks about her day, and something caught him. Okay. Minted in the kingdom that we pace through every day. I think this is an event. And I think it is descriptive of the nature and character of God. Okay? Okay. Here's another one. My beloved husband never appreciated this poem. I think that he thought it has to do with the mundanity of what we'll be hearing about in a second, and I thought it was wonderful. So there are some times that we might experience something that's nothing, mm-hmm. and somebody else may say, oh, no, that was something. Yeah. Okay? So as I said, events don't fully self-reveal.
Well, they're not coercive.
They're not coercive. They're not didactic. It's a different kind of learning, knowing, experiencing. Okay, so here we go. In the middle of the road, there was a stone. There was a stone in the middle of the road. There was a stone. In the middle of the road, there was a stone. Never should I forget this event in the life of my fatigued retinas. Okay, so it's been a while. I've been around for a while. I've seen a lot of things. Never should I forget that in the middle of the road, there was a stone. There was a stone in the middle of the road. In the middle of the road, there was a stone. I suggest that, for this author, was an event. For my husband, not so much.
Well, maybe it was Mick or Keith, too.
Pardon me?
Might have been Mick or Keith.
Oh, you mean the stones?
Yes.
Did you get the reference? No. Oh. You need to explain yourself. This is not a poem. I've got two more. This is not a poem, but it's a reflection of Martin Buber. I don't know that they're... What heaven is all about, but if it's one where we actually see each other face to face, I can't wait to meet Martin Buber. Yeah. this event happened when he was 11. Okay? And he's remembering it. So this happened when he was 11 years old, but the experience of this event shaped him for a lifetime, I suggest. So here we go. When I was 11 years of age, spending the summer on my grandparents' estate, I used, as often as I could do it, unobserved, to steal into the stable and gently stroke the neck of my darling, a broad, dapple gray horse. It was not a casual delight, but a great, certainly friendly, but also deeply stirring happening. If I am to explain it now, beginning from the still very fresh memory of my hand, I must say that what I experienced in touch with the animal was the other, capital O, other. Okay? I forgive this translation, but I think he's talking about the holy, the sacred, the other. The immense otherness of the other, which, however, did not remain strange, like the otherness of the ox and the ram, but rather let me draw near and touch it. By the way, it's not to say this couldn't have happened with an ox and a ram, but this happened with a horse. He touches the horse. And I just love, you know, if I'm to explain it now, you know, still fresh the memory in my hand from when he was 11 years old, touching this horse, feeling the power of the other, and it drew him, allowed him to touch it. It was like touching the holy, okay? When I stroked the mighty mane, sometimes marvelously smooth-combed, at other times just as astonishingly wild, and felt the life beneath my hand, it was as though the element of vitality itself bordered on my skin. Something that was not I, was certainly not akin to me, palpably the other, not just another, but really the other itself. So he's aware that this made him aware of something beyond himself. Yes, he felt it in his own hand, okay? But it wasn't that it was more than just touching some, it was something happened. It was interactive. He experienced the life of this thing, okay? It was as though the element of vitality itself, I think this is important, bordered on my skin. Something that was not I, was certainly not akin to me, palpably the other, and not just another, but really the other itself. Let me say, sacredness, the holiness. And yet it let me approach. I think events do that. It allows us to come toward it if we will, like the herons, like the geese, okay, like the rock. Confided itself to me, placed itself elementally in the relation of thou and thou with me. I think events give us an experience of I and thou. Somehow event, as I understand Caputo to be talking, has a relational dynamic. The horse, even when I had not begun by pouring oats for him into the manger, very gently raised his massive head, ears flicking, then snorted quietly, as a conspirator gives a signal meant to be recognizable only by his fellow co-conspirator. And I was approved. To borrow a phrase from Tillich, it sounds to me that Martin Buber felt profoundly accepted. I was accepted by this sense of the holy. This happened to him when he was 11. He's writing it now as a mature man who's done a lot of theological reflection. One more. This is a poem by R.S. Thomas, who's a Welsh poet and an Anglican priest, long gone. It's called The Bright Field. I have seen the sun break through to illuminate a small field for a while, and gone my way and forgotten it. But that was the pearl of great price, the one field that had treasure in it. I realize now that I must give all that I have to possess it. Life is not hurrying on to a receding future, nor hankering after an imagined past. It is the turning aside like Moses to the miracle of the lit bush, to a brightness that seemed as transitory as your youth once, but is the eternity that awaits you. What I love about this poem, he acknowledges that I've seen the sun break through to illuminate a small field for a while, and I've gone my way and forgotten about it. No big deal. Happens all the time. Then he comes to realize, but that was it. He calls the pearl of great price. That one field had the treasure in it. And he's not talking about, you know, a treasure chest and looking for money and blah, 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 okay? Something came alive for him. The time that he did notice that field. How many times had he walked away from it, not seen it, if you will, to change the metaphor, not heard it? But this time he really saw it. Like the snow geese. Like the herons. Like the stone in the road. Okay? And he realized, I must give all that I have to possess that. As if we could possess it, all right? But it stirred a longing in him for that. I want more of that, because there is something in that experience that has illumined everything for me. And when he said, it's like turning aside like Moses to the miracle of the lit bush, let us not think that the burning bush was a burning bush. I mean, I love the fact that it said that this story in the Old Testament talks about a burning bush that is not consumed. Yep, because it's not a fiery burning bush, but it is a bush that perhaps caught Moses' eye the way this bright field brought Aris Thomas's attention awake. It's like, to see the bush alive, lit, okay? This is the eternity that awaits you. I love that suggestion of R.S. Thomas's. What I suggest about events is that these things happen all the time. They happen again and again and again. They happen inexhaustibly. If there is an eternal God, we are seeing glimpses of it in these examples. An event in the way that Caputo is talking about is, to borrow from R.S. Thomas, the eternity that awaits you. Events always happen. They come to us every day, maybe myriads of times. Sometimes we see them, sometimes we don't. Sometimes an experience of this kind of call or summons or hope. For me, these are all experiences of hope because we didn't create them. They come to us. They open something in us. They make us realize that there is more possible than we imagined. Who would have thought the two herons would have the effect that they did? That's impossible. No, it happened. Who would have thought that just petting a horse could make someone feel this profound existential sense of being connected to something bigger, deeper than themselves, and to know they're deeply a part of it and accept it? Well, it's impossible for a horse to make you feel that way. No, it isn't. Some may think these things are impossible. I think what Caputo is suggesting, these kinds of events, some may say they're impossible. This is the possibility. These are the possibilities of hope. Hope that point towards things we have not yet fully imagined. Okay. as I said earlier, I don't think there's anything esoteric about this. I don't think that any of us have to have some special way of apprehending things. I think this is a deeply human capacity in us to respond to things. And if you who have horses, dogs, love flowers, love gardening, love. My hope is that you can relate to these examples, and I'll ask you in just a few minutes if indeed you can. Let me also say that events also could happen in a darker tone, like events of war or of suffering or when death comes. But I think the effect of an event is to open us to a deeper realization. They function like epiphanies, as I said earlier. Okay? The world is constantly addressing us in its remedial turn. Do you not perceive it? Let's just take a moment of silence and then I'll prompt some questions. I'm going to give you another minute of silence, and at the end of this next minute, I'm going to ring the bell. What I'd love to hear from you is, does this resonate? Do you kind of get what either Caputo is saying or what I'm trying to get at? Can you relate to this notion of event as, we might even think of it as serendipity, I certainly consider it grace, as these inbreakings into our world that palpably affect how we see and see ourselves, maybe see each other, see the very thing, that within which we live and move and have our being, that it draws out, it evokes something deep in our humanity, that I would say is good. That there is something about event that describes the nature and character of God. Okay? So think about this. I'd love to know your thoughts and reactions or your critique to this. I'm kind of playing with this as a notion, but it obviously strikes me as something that is helping me to pay attention in a different way and also not to feel that I have to contrive anything. Okay? Now let me say, the call to us through an event does require action from us. So don't confuse the two things, all right? Because I think that that something can happen in an event that will make us ideally, and I shouldn't say that, forget ideally, that will practically call us to justice and compassion, ultimately, okay? But I think there's something about the nature of this kind of interactivity that helps to bring us alive in a way that calls out the character and dignity of the human being as well as reflecting the nature and character of God. So let me give you just a minute. Ponder this. Give me your thoughts, your critiques, your wonderments as a way to help me carry on the conversation in another time. Okay? So a minute of just see what comes up for you. So, what's happening in what's happening?
I totally relate to that. The events seem to me when they happen are like little pinpricks of illumination, of light that really touch me. And I work a lot with dreams, and the events that transpire in dreams as synchronicities are also that way. And I don't know what it is that they touch, but they make the world come alive.
So this is not just an idea for you. You know the experience.
Okay. I'm going to offer just you at the very end alluded to the fact that times of darkness, if you will, death, can do the same. I'm reminded, and I wish I could be at all clearer about this, reminded of either an Episcopal or perhaps an English Anglican priest served as a chaplain, as I recall, during World War II, and out of witnessing some of the horrors of the battlefield, was pretty transformed. But he's a poet as well, and so he, as I recall,
Wilfred
and I wish
Owens.
I could be at all
Is it Wilfred
clear.
Owens?
Might be, but anyway. But writes profoundly, I think, about how the horrors of what he saw on the battlefield were so transformative. And I think it speaks to what you're getting at with event, because I think it was transformative for him to see the ways in which we lay waste one to the other of that which is so precious. And I think there's something in all of that that gets at what you're also describing. But it's the other side, and that was what I was intrigued about at the very end.
Yeah, and I wish I could recall, he has a really powerful poem, I think it's Wilfred Owens, who talks about all of the young men who have died, and seeing that, experiencing that, and instead of it being all in vain, it evokes something in him that, how do I want to put this? Instead of his surrendering to dread, he came out valuing the glory of the human condition, even so. And I think that's the power of the event. I think events do just the opposite of, instead of giving up, or instead of us being worn down by the events of life, I think that in an event in the way that Caputo was talking about it has a way of enlivening us.
I feel like an alien visitor.
Visitor, did you say?
Alien visitor.
Well, you're welcome here.
Nano.
Yes. It's called The Opportunity. It is not fortuitous at all that I am here. I am in a process that I truly believe in my deepest parts of my soul, that God is putting me into the next step, the next step, the next step along the way. And your poetry was only a backup and a validation of that reality. I was given a gift from the age of 5. My entire family, all sides, all cousins, aunts, uncles, you name it, grandparents, were outdoor people. And I have come to the realization that when I finally just gave up the way we all think we're supposed to be, and we're supposed to look and dress and think and talk and speak, and gave it to God in my weakest moment on my knees in tears, having been there a few times along the way, I came to realize that I've seen or felt something that has put me in this search and this process. 16 years ago, my mother passed away, and unbeknown and unsuspecting as I was, it broke my spirit. I fought and I fought and I fought, but my answer was to go back to the church where I was raised, baptized, and confirmed, which was none other than the Episcopal Church. I came back, but 16 years ago are very different from where it is mm-hmm. and what has happened in our world today. Mm-hmm. And I started to search because it didn't feel like home anymore. Mm-hmm. It felt discombobulated, disconnected. Judgmental, etc. I ended up trying all different places, but my parents had always encouraged me and allowed me to do that. So it was never a problem, except I couldn't call anything, quote, home. And now God is definitely leading me home, because I think I identified internally in my life, having been single a long time and having to deal with it all by myself for the most part, I discovered that the tripod needs repair. The Trinity, one leg is broken. God the Father's not the problem. God the Son's never been the problem. But the Holy Spirit has been missing from our world for 50 or 60 years or more. And I'm being called to discover that and open my never shut up mouth for the first time in my life. And I thank you so much for just adding this to my repertoire, because I don't know what's coming, but I'm writing all kinds of stuff that I never thought I'd write.
Okay. Great.
And I love this.
Great.
But I pray to God that the grandchildren, the children, the grandchildren, and the great-grandchildren will be dragged to learn and hear this.
Well, and I would suggest that the Holy Spirit has been with us all along, only we did not see it.
Yeah.
Okay? So, anyway, welcome home. It's nice to have a feeling of home, isn't it? Home wherever we are. Thank you.
I have two in this row. I'm going to start with the gentleman and then go back
to them. Okay, and then I know we'll soon take a break.
Oh, I was a school teacher for a long time, and I studied Native American, you know, specifically the Northwest cultures. And the first title that came to my mind was, I heard the owl call my name.
Oh, yeah.
And in their society, in their culture, they would expect significance of the geese or the herons. I mean, they would see something like the geese or the herons, and they would be expecting that. I mean, they would be tied together more because their fabric of the culture, you know, the coyote has a backstory, the bear, the raven, they all have personalities, and that's just part of who they are. So to just be out there and see those things, they would be more often having those event experiences.
Right.
We don't look for them, I don't think. We're too busy.
Yeah.
And it's just part of their natural background.
Yeah, and we think we're so advanced.
That's right.
You know, they have something that we have forgotten or that we aren't seeing anymore in the same way. So that there's an intrinsic kind of wisdom in terms of our relationship to the world and how the world speaks to us. Yeah, so thank you for that.
I just wanted to say that over the years, I've been so frustrated with the institutional church, and now with this huge swing into fundamentalism in many traditions, that I, as you speak about all of this, it is so clear to me the reason why I can even say that I'm still Christian is because of these moments that gave me some sort of instinctual or numinous moments that I felt connected to something beyond me that felt divine and yet never could talk about it, right? But thank you. Yes, and I think a lot of us are searching for where to continue that relationship.
You know, and I think that Christianity is not a stranger to this. I mean, Jesus himself says, consider the lilies of the field, okay? Which I think Madeleine L'Engle suggested should be the 11th commandment, okay? Consider the lilies of the field. And Jesus' examples of things were right out of nature. He didn't philosophize, really. He talked about seeing what is, and then, well, how do you see it? Where do you see yourself in relationship to this? And again, it was not like his parables. They're not coercive. They're very evocative. We tend to want to put we tend to want to make them into little moral stories. They're not.
They're not.
Okay. So I appreciate what you're saying, and I still hold the my experience of Christianity is that we have this, as all the great religious traditions do.
Yeah.
we have a way of, we see what is. And if Christianity can help us to see again, to see the more, it's like, I love the Bartimaeus story. Oh, Jesus, restore my sight. Restore my sight. Help me to see again. Okay? I think Christianity has a lot to offer, as do other great traditions. But I agree with you that the way that Christianity is often taught and understood reduces some of these stories and experiences they're not recognizable as I think what the original followers of Jesus probably sensed, heard, saw, experienced. So here's for Christianity. We won't give up on it. I won't give up on it yet. All right, and then we'll have a break.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm following up on the gentleman over here who said he was a school teacher. I was too. And worked with children for a long, long time. And what was wonderful about working with them was they were always astonished. Sometimes not so good, but most of the time. And their astonishment some days took me through the day and into the day and in reflection at night. So my question might be for myself is, because I taught all across, kindergarten right through to grade 13, I'm sorry, I'm from Canada, grade 13, and then adults, and then older adults. And what I saw happening was, with the little children, they were astonished all the time, practically. And then along about grade 4, 11 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, I had to pull the astonishment from them. But then we get to the older adults who were coming back and being teachers. It reappeared.
Astonishment is back.
So I guess you used the word numbness before, Marianne, and I just wonder, when that numbness happens, is there something that's the opposite of astonishment going on? That's all. Thank you.
All of these comments have given me three thoughts. First, very quickly, I think the thing that made the Gettysburg Address so important, 700 words, something like that, was that it captured the moment that was the Civil War. And it turned the Civil War into event in the way, this is anachronistic talking, of course, because no one was thinking in these terms, but it turned the Civil War into an event in the way that Caputo talks about. And in his second inaugural address, actually Lincoln addresses this very issue. Second, in terms of institutional Christianity, the Judeo-Christian tradition as an institution, I agree with you, it's remarkably frustrating at times. And I'm a professional Christian, so I'm part of the problem rather than the solution. But it seems to me, looked at correctly, the Torah is an event that we have analyzed out of its own eventness. And I think Jesus is the same thing. I think Jesus is event in the sense that Caputo and Marianne are talking about. And finally, there is the words of Robert Hunter, the great sage, who was channeled and given voice by Jerry Garcia. Once in a while you get shown the light in the strangest of places if you look at it right. Three thoughts. That's scarlet begonias.
Perfect. And as you said just a minute ago, sort of under your breath, astonishment is back.
It's back.
Let's take a 15-minute break, and I'll ring the bell to have us come back together.